Hour number two on this Monday. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ok Chin Community Studios here at 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Cardinals still putting together their roster for 2021. Could it involve a free agent running back from Pittsburgh? Here to give us the latest on that. From The Athletic, Steelers writer Mark Cabali joins us here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Mark, thanks for making some time for us today. We appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, guys.
I'm a pop culture nerd, so I got to get this out of the way. I was going through your Twitter feed before we started, and your tweet on Greg Brady's high school team's defense that I just retweeted is one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
You know what? I've always was curious about that because, you know, back in my day watching Brady Bunch, I mean, where was the defense? I think I made that tweet wrong because that was not the defense. That was the opposing team's defense. And actually, Greg Brady's team. That must not be very good. And the defense he was playing against must have been awful. I still think his toe might have been on the line, so they might have to review that.
I think you might be.
All right, so give us the scouting report on James Conner, who's coming to the Valley today.
Well, if you're expecting a guy to be a workhorse running back and a guy that's going to be able to give you 25, 30 carries a game, you're not thinking of the right guy. The problem when he had in Pittsburgh over the 4 years he was here was he's injury prone. I mean, this is even dating back to his final years in college when he had knee injuries. Every single year he had some sort of injury that kept him off the field for an extended period of time. I mean, it was just getting to the point where they could not count on him for an extended period of time, and that's been his biggest downfall, and who knows what it is. I mean, it's been a multitude of different injuries. You can't just point at one thing. I mean, it's knees, it's quads, it's shoulders, it's just about everything. So that's been the biggest downfall with him. When he's healthy, he's decent. He's not going to be a guy that's going to break you off 40, 50-yard runs, but he's more of a between-the-tackle type of 7 to 8-yard type of run guy. He can play all three downs, but like I said, the biggest issue has been with him has been his durability. It has not been good.
But even last year, though, Mark, looking at his and we know, the Steelers – moved away from the running game late in the season, but to average 4.3 yards per carry for a struggling rushing offense, when he was on the field, how would you rate his effectiveness last year?
That number, that 4.3, might be blown out of proportion because he had a couple long runs late in games. I'm talking about 60, 70-yard runs where the game was in hand. Mm-hmm. And then if you know anything about football, of course you do. Those are what makes those averages go from mediocre to very good. So, like I said, he wasn't anything more than average. And now, on the upside of that, he didn't really have any offensive line to run behind, mm-hmm. and that's been a key. I mean, his best year was the year that Le'Veon Bell held out for the entire season. He had about 6 or 7 games where he was an absolute dominant force. I mean, we're talking, I think it was 600-yard games. That's the year he made the Pro Bowl. He had, I believe, close to 10 touchdowns. But, it just never materialized after that. And it's probably been partly because the offensive line just took a drastic turn after he really didn't have much yards to, much room to run for, sure, as well. So if you put him in front of a better offensive line, he could be better. I mean, I just think right now, his point of his career, the Steelers, or definitely, I'll just put you from the Steelers' perspective, is if you can't be on the field, they're not going to re-sign you. And it takes a pretty much a history of that for them to move on, and they just got to the point where they couldn't trust him anymore, and that's why they moved on from him.
All right, what should we read in Arizona about James Saxon being a member of the Cardinals coaching staff? Do you know if they've got a good relationship? We're just trying to get an idea if he would want the Cardinals as much as maybe they would want James.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, Saxon was here the year, I believe, that Conner had his breakout one season. I believe it was in, 17, if my memory serves me right, maybe 18. where he had that 900-plus yards. He ended up getting injured in that season, or he would have been well over 1,000 yards of that season as well. And ever since Saxon left, Saxon was gone. They fired him here in Pittsburgh maybe 2 years ago. If Connor's numbers have gone down, so I could see a correlation there of bringing him in. But when you get to this point of the off season, guys, these running backs are pretty much a dime a dozen. Mm-hmm. You give them the 1 year, $1 million, and they're pretty much going to jump at the opportunity because of the devaluing of the position, where teams just don't want to invest in them, invest in guys, let alone guys that have been injury prone like he has. So I would say Saxon probably got him. I mean, I'm not quite sure why the Steelers end up getting rid of Saxon here, and they brought in Eddie Faulkner from college, but he did have his best year under Saxon, so that could be something.
Mark Cabali of The Athletic, our guest here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Earlier in this show, we've had the discussion before, the Cardinals obviously looking for running backs. Do they go the veteran route to pair somebody with Chase Edmonds? Do they go that route in the draft? And with them picking 16th, Mark, it seems unlikely that they would go running back that high. I know the Steelers are looking for running backs too after what happened, and you know, they obviously have the availability of their of a roster spot to draft somebody. At number 24, do you think the Steelers could go running back like a Najee Harris there?
He's definitely on the board. I mean, all three of them. I think Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, and even Javonte Williams. I know that people are projecting him more into the second, but he would fit perfectly with the Steelers. The only issue there, if you look at the Steelers' history of running backs, and even over the last 20 years, they really don't draft running backs in the first round. They've had, Le'Veon Bell was a second rounder, and I think you have to go all the way back to maybe 07 when Rashard Mendenhall. Even if you go all the way back to the 70s, you're looking at guys like Greg Hawthorne and Walter Abercrombie, and this is after the Franco Harris one. So they don't really put much stock in that first round. And for a running back, and it's understandable, yeah, because, you know, it's like buying a car. As soon as you draft them, all of a sudden they start not being worth as much. They got 4 years left in them, and you don't want to pay them for that second contract. So they're thinking, why would I get a running back in the first round? Because we're going to most likely have to move on from him for 4 years, and if I take some other position, he could be a 10-year type of guy. That's their thought. So I would be shocked if they would take a running back in the first round. I think they'll have to do it in the second, maybe move up in the second to be able to get that. But definitely, they have to find some sort of running back in this first or second round.
Gotcha.
Regardless, because if you look at their roster and Benny Snell and Anthony McFarlane and Kalen Ballage, it's just not going to quite cut it.
All right. I'm curious about this. How did Steelers fans, how did the city of Pittsburgh reconcile last season where 1 minute you're chasing unbeaten status and the next minute you're spiraling out of the NFL playoffs? That was weird, huh?
It was all Ben's fault.
Well, of course. Of course.
And there's no reason that he should be back right now. They'll win 3 games this year. It's like those first 11 games did not exist. It was like those last 3 or 4. I mean, I don't even think they played any starters in that Week 17 game, or even the Colts game where they actually beat a pretty good Colts team. So all they're looking at is the loss in Cincinnati, the loss to Buffalo, and that loss in Cleveland, and it's just that this team is awful garbage. They're going 3-14 this year. They should have cut the entire team. You know how irrational regular fans are. We're talking about crazy Steeler fans. They want everybody gone. They want Tomlin gone. So I would say that they're not taking it very well.
Well, since we're talking about Pittsburgh's fan reaction, let's go to the offseason reaction. I think there was a lot of people counting on J.J. Watt wearing the black and gold this year,
yeah,
to join T.J. What was the reaction when J.J. Watt chose Arizona over the Steelers?
Oh, you know, people were absolutely convinced that he was going to, you know, sign him 1 year, $1 million deal just so he can play with both of his brothers. I'm like, are you absolutely? I mean, a lot of people thought that was going to happen, and you have to be crazy. I mean, what did he get in Arizona? What did he get, $8-10 million or whatever it was? It was some crazy amount of money, and the Steelers didn't have any money to mess with anyway. So people actually convinced themselves that playing with his two brothers was going to force him or allow him to take a entry-level position and come play with his brothers. And people were actually pretty upset when he did sign somewhere else.
Yeah.
But it was never an option. I mean, sure, the Steelers gave him a call and said, hey, JJ, you're going to play with your brother? We'll give you 2 years and $4 million or something, some crazy number like that. And he'd be like, nah, I think I'm going to go over here. The weather's nice.
Yeah.
The team might be a little bit further ahead than the Steelers are, and I'm getting a little bit more money. So
yeah.
I think he made the right decision.
Yeah, blood
I wouldn't
is.
Want to play with, I wouldn't want to play with all three of my brothers.
Yeah, same, man. I got enough of my brother growing up, man, you know?
You got 40 years after your football life to mess with your brother.
Right.
Why don't you get to play
right.
with him?
Right.
Mark, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thank
we appreciate you joining us.
All right, guys, take it easy.
Mark Cabali covers the Steelers for The Athletic. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Nissan, west of the hassle. Visit coulternissan.com. Well, when it happened over a year ago, 13 months ago now, when the Arizona Cardinals absolutely bilked the Houston Texans in the trade for DeAndre Hopkins, sending David Johnson to the Texans along with that contract, we couldn't get over the fact. For months after, even before we saw DeAndre Hopkins even put on a Cardinal uniform and play on Sundays, It just didn't seem possible that a deal that one-sided could exist in today's NFL. And
that's a good way of putting it. It was so one-sided, you thought it couldn't possibly be real, or it wouldn't get to the finish line, that somebody was going to stand up and go, wait a minute, we're not doing that. Hey, you know that guy you were talking to? He didn't have the authority.
We hit the wrong button on the computer.
Yeah, we got the wrong button.
Yeah, there was literally that weak kind of like buffer zone.
Yeah.
Before it went through, before it was officially announced, we were like, okay, clearly they're
having
slapping around
thoughts.
Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
But you remember that famous Steve Keim cut when he admitted to during that interim time, because they had that deal done before it was announced.
Yeah, for weeks.
And Steve Keim mentioned that there were a lot of times when they'd just be sitting around and he'd go to Michael Bidwell, can you believe we traded for DeAndre Hopkins? And they sat on that for weeks.
Yeah, let's revisit. This is from last April. This is Steve Keim talking about that.
It's like no other, no different from any other trade. You know, you have conversations with teams throughout the league and see where there's opportunities to try to improve your roster. And DeAndre was a guy that myself and several others in the organization had been really high on. So to be able to get a player of his caliber and to add to the weapons that we already possess, I feel like can certainly take us to the next level.
Yeah, and I think Steve Keim played it close to the vest, and I forget who the media outlet was that reported afterwards that, yeah, indeed, that was the case, that deal had been struck very early on in the offseason before the beginning of the league year, and it was even announced before the beginning of the league year, but it definitely represented an opportunity for one side to say, wait, hold on. And then the Cardinals weren't going to be that side. To their credit, and the Cardinals are really good, as we've acknowledged more than a few times on this show. They're really good at keeping secrets. But then you get to the point, okay, it is real. The Texans had to know something, right? DeAndre Hopkins has something wrong with him.
Mm-hmm.
he passed a physical, but he's not going to perform. He was phenomenal in his first year as a Cardinal. It couldn't have worked out any better. And the people from the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference agree. Best sports transaction of the year, the Cardinals' acquisition of Hopkins from the Texans. It won the award. It's called the Alpha Award. They handed this out at the two-day Boston-based event, and they do it every year. Interestingly
enough. Would you want to attend that? Would you want to spend two full days? What a dork!
What a dork!
Do you want to spend two full days diving into math and numbers?
I didn't want to spend 2 days doing math when I had math class every day. So why would I want to do it now?
Yeah, I wonder what guest speakers they have. You know,
probably got some wild parties going on.
Oh yeah, I bet.
Don't break my pocket protector.
Right.
That's unfair.
All right. So this analytics convention awarded this acquisition of the year to DeAndre Hopkins, which is stunning to me. That tells you this trade was such a lopsided heist that it topped Tom Brady going to Tampa and winning a Super Bowl with the Buccaneers. Now, that story in and of itself is only getting better and better and better. There are people who cover the Patriots who are reading tea leaves and actually saying that Bill Belichick is under pressure this year to have a good year. Bill Belichick, of all people.
Yeah, hot seat.
Hot, not even, I haven't seen hot seat, but I've seen pressure. And it's because Tom Brady went and won a Super Bowl on command, and he kind of put this forward that, yeah, see what I did without you? What can you do without me?
And that couldn't, there's obviously a lot of other factors in play, but last year could not have been a bigger win for Tom Brady in the Brady versus Belichick.
You're exactly right. Everything about that, it couldn't have been bigger, because all throughout the regular season, there was that feeling that, you know, this team, I don't know. Was it Mark Schlereth who said they were like a something that could like catch fire, like a dish you were cooking that could catch fire? Something.
No,
like
that was Sando.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
And that's what it
the
felt like.
The saucepan could catch fire.
Right. Yeah. That's right. And that's what it felt like. So you didn't know how this thing was going to end for Tom Brady. And then they got to the playoffs, and it was like nobody else knew how to win football games in the playoffs other than Tom Brady. And now Bill Belichick has to live with that. Robert Kraft has even been on record as critical of the organization's methodologies now. Said, we got to get better at drafting. It's the first time I've heard the owner even remotely criticize Bill Belichick. So this, to me, it's like this story is gigantic. And for Tom Brady to Tampa to not be the acquisition of the year tells you what a player-for-player ripoff that trade was.
Yeah, and you know, in discussing this earlier, the point brought up, okay, Tom Brady was a free agent signing. You didn't have to give up anything to get him. But the year before the acquisition of the year, by this very same MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference, the Alpha Award went to DJ LeMahieu being acquired by the New York Yankees. Free agent signing. Yankees didn't make a trade with the Rockies to get him. So the precedent was set.
Yeah.
Here's another interesting local note. Twice, they've been giving this award out every year at this conference since 2013. Twice since 2013, a team won the award for acquiring Chris Paul.
That's crazy.
The Clippers won it in 2013, and the Rockets won it in 2018.
The way it's trending? Yeah.
I think Chris Paul will be eligible for this award next year because his season is still in progress. Even though he was acquired last year, the season with the Phoenix Suns are still in progress. So I'll bet you this we could be back-to-back winners at the famed analytics conference, baby. Yeah.
the famed analytics conference that we just found out about.
Yeah. Imagine if he does win, Chris Paul, and he's won that three times in his career. What an odd career that would be. That you change teams that frequently, and yet almost every team you go to is so much better for acquiring you, and yet you still change teams that frequently.
Well, there's that, and then the weirdness of the vast improvement that those teams make, and I wish I would have captured it, although I saw a tweet.
Mm-hmm.
The first year of Chris Paul, basically everywhere he's been in his NBA, the winning percentage jumps through the roof, even when you join a good team like the Rockets, but still no championships. That's the other thing that makes that story
weird.
Never
even been in an NBA Finals. That's what I think the basketball community really wants to see. And we might get that chance. So we might get that analytics award 2 years running.
The cool. Annie.
Yeah, so, but again, now, DeAndre Hopkins and this offense, it really, obviously, it's all got to connect this coming season.
That's the other thing that I was thinking about. Like, if they... According to the analytics, that acquisition was even better than Tom Brady going to the Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
Does that show just how much the Cardinals underachieved with DeAndre Hopkins then?
It's one way to look at it. I think there were a lot of issues in a lot of different places down the stretch run of that season. And it certainly wasn't a good look the way they ended the season. So... But again, the beauty of what they've done is this is the second consecutive offseason now on top of the acquisition of DeAndre Hopkins, where the Cardinals have succeeded in doing something very grand and majestic to just get people to focus on the future and not what they just saw.
Mm-hmm.
They've changed the narrative.
They did.
Let me ask you this question. If we were having our own nerd, I mean, analytics conference.
What
here,
a dork.
What a dork.
Based on the history of sports in this state, and you were giving out the Alpha Award for the best acquisition of all time.
Ooh.
What would win the Alpha Award?
Wow. Randy Johnson won.
It's got to be Randy Johnson.
Charles
is
Barkley,
Randy Johnson? Is Randy Johnson the greatest free agent signing in the history of sports?
That's a good question. I mean, look at what that man accomplished. Four consecutive Cy Young Awards.
And a World Series title.
And a World Series title.
All for the low, low price of $52 million.
It's a good question.
That's very hard to quantify because, I mean, LeBron James was a free agent, right? When he went to Miami?
Yes.
And they won multiple championships.
But he gets minus points because he had a primetime special.
But that's it, though. Like it's hard to judge it because all these players who sort of dictate their own future and where they go and where
they sign. LeBron James played 4 years in Miami, correct?
Yeah.
They went to four finals. He didn't win four MVPs.
No.
That's true.
He didn't win four Cy Young Awards either.
He won not one, not two, not three, not four.
Right.
Not even one.
Yeah, LeBron's got to be up there.
Yeah, but it's different because that wasn't a team. That's when sports changed. That's when players started making the decisions. When I think about greatest acquisitions, I think about team-based.
The front office that's making the decision.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah,
Johnson won, Barkley two.
Yes, Johnson won, Barkley two.
And then
maybe
a gap.
Chris Paul three. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, Schilling
would have to be up there because he was instrumental in that World Series championship.
Yeah, but see, that's sort of, if you put Schilling in the top five, then doesn't that a little bit
diminish Randy?
Diminish Randy, yeah.
Except he pitched so many big games in the postseason. You remember that game five he pitched in that opening round series?
Yeah.
Who was it that opening round series?
In 2001?
Yeah. Because it was the Braves in the second round. It was the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a team with a lot of pedigree.
It's fun to go down that road, isn't it?
Oh, I know. Yeah. It is.
I wonder where they're going to put that Alpha Award at the Cardinals complex. Go right in Steve Keim's office.
I wonder what it looks like.
Hey, I want an Alpha, man. Can't fire me.
It's not actually an award. It's a non-fungible token. Yeah. You know, we are talking about analytics here. You don't have to be a star athlete to get your signing bonus. Just text BONUS right now to 620-620 and listen for your name this afternoon at 1:35 to win $500. That's BONUS, B-O-N-U-S, to 620-620. It's the Arizona Sports signing bonus. Coming up next, Bick just mentioned that flammable saucepan of personalities in Tampa Bay that worked out well in year one. Could it involve another former Cardinal? We'll get into the possibilities next and more proof to fuel that straight ahead. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Monday edition of Bickley and Marotta live from the Ak Chin Community Studios. Hope you had a good weekend. We're back at it for another week and another week of
Fitz Watch. Really? He didn't announce over the weekend?
Maybe I missed it.
Maybe he's waiting for you to get your hair cut, you freak.
That's right. Coming up soon.
Wait, me?
Yeah. Right.
I almost broke down and got one this week.
Did you?
It's been about, almost 4 weeks for me, so.
Really?
I'm about due. You got a haircut this weekend.
Did. Yeah.
I'm getting one soon, so you don't get used to this hair.
Yeah, but
Jared,
don't get used to this hair. Said, you've given us no other choice.
I said this to Bick. I said, it's so weird at this point that it's almost becoming concerning. You announced today with certainty, I'm getting a haircut on April 25th.
April 25th. But
he does not have an appointment.
No.
It's just an arbitrary date.
It's not arbitrary. It's not?
Because you have to show off to more people.
Yes,
Take a picture and think of the people that work with you.
I'm going to be seeing people I haven't seen in over a year. So I want them to enjoy the full...
Enjoy.
Oh, okay. That's a word.
Okay, sure. Yeah, that is a word. You're right. It is a word.
Did you get beat up a lot as a kid, Jarrett?
I was a very fast runner.
That's true. Yeah. That's how you developed your track skills. No doubt about that.
Can I jump in here for a second? I'm taking a good hard look at Jarrett right now for the first time today. And your sideburns are about to grow into your mouth.
Yeah.
Like, they are dangerously close. So can that be taken care of before April 25th?
These people have to see this.
Right. He's giving the people what they want, Sarah.
Yeah. Oh,
we're 2 weeks away, guys.
Two weeks, the countdown.
You're throwing a random date out there. You're not going to adhere to this. We've heard you say 4 or 5 times already, this is the way I'm going to get it. Isn't my hair ridiculous? Even I'm getting sick of it.
America is getting back to normal slowly. So after April 25th, that next wave, not of coronavirus, that next wave of Carlin visitors will happen. I can't do it until after Cinco de Mayo.
Trust me on this, Carlin. Yep. I know better than anybody the folly of mistaking long hair for good-looking hair. Okay, I've lived it. There's a picture on the wall in the lobby that proves it. I thought it was cool. I look at pictures and I'm like, wow. Don't let that happen to you, man. Learn from me, bro.
I hate it. I also hate it. It's absolutely obnoxious and annoying. It's in my face when I sleep.
You don't hate it. If you hated it, you'd get rid of it. You embrace it.
It's material for the sports kebab every Friday. Right. I am done listening to you talk about
my hair looks like...
I'm so hairy. How hairy are you?
Okay, so come on, Carlin. Get it together. All right, Larry Fitzgerald.
Fitzwatch.
Yeah, Fitzwatch. What has happened recently about Larry Fitzgerald? Oh, I don't know. Other than the Bruce Arians Foundation, which does great work and hosts a golf tournament every year, used to do it in Arizona when he was a head coach here. Now they do it in Lake Oconee, Georgia.
But I think he had one in Georgia all the time, too, didn't he?
He had like dual sites.
Yeah.
I attended one in Georgia, and it's a really cool thing, and there's a lot of big-name celebrities who show up for it, from Ben Roethlisberger to you name it. They decided to, on a printed piece of material, and maybe they have others.
I think this is an Instagram post.
Oh, okay. It's an Instagram post. Yeah. They used an image of Larry Fitzgerald swinging a driver.
Yeah. With the Arians Family Foundation.
Uh-huh.
The Bruce Arians logo, you know, the headset with the glasses and the hat.
Uh-huh.
The Tampa, presented by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and then Buccaneers colors. Fitz swinging the club with just the caption that says, 1 week.
Uh-huh. 1 week.
This was pointed out to a listener named Richard, sent this to us over the weekend.
Oh, he
said, hope this isn't a preview. Don't know why they would use this as this picture.
There's a good number of celebrity football players and people who attend Bruce Arians' golf tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So choosing Larry Fitzgerald when you're not even playing the golf tournament in Arizona anymore seems to me to be a very interesting choice in visuals. That's all. Now, okay, Wolf said it this morning, and I'm starting to wonder if Wolf isn't more right about this issue than any other scenario, that he is waiting for Tampa to shake loose enough money to make it worth his while.
Mm-hmm.
That's what confuses me, though, is like, does he want to play or does he want to, like, him only wanting to play for a certain amount of money seems weird for me.
But it seems weird for you until you realize that, A, Larry Fitzgerald has done his own negotiations. Larry Fitzgerald loves winning the deal, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
And Larry Fitzgerald's got a lot of pride, and he is not going to play for something terribly under market value, because that would be a sign of desperation, and Fitz would never want to give off that vibe, ever. So he would have to be compensated on a level, because if he took a tiny chunk of money, like the contract that the Steelers may have been offering J.J. Watt, hey, come play with your brothers, if he took that, it would look like he was doing nothing but trying to gravy train his way to a championship. Fitz would need this deal to reflect that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers really want him as a wide receiver.
But don't you think the number is going to be such that if this does happen, that gravy train effect is going to be in play? If you leave Arizona after, 17 years and go somewhere else for a year, and you're going to the team, it doesn't matter what the price tag is, he's going to be accused of that by some.
Uh-huh.
Others won't care. I don't think that's avoidable. the gravy train. Yeah, I'm jumping on the gravy train to try to win a title.
And you know what? Larry Fitzgerald is so beloved that I think this is going to look a little different. If and when he does come back and announce that he's going to continue his career with Tom Brady and Bruce Arians in Tampa, I really don't think there's going to be that the eye rolling that came along with Kevin Durant joining the Warriors, that came along with other guys, Karl Malone joining the Lakers. I think Larry Fitzgerald has built up so much massive, not goodwill, great will, that people are going to be cool with him doing whatever he chooses. I really believe that. I don't think anybody, you disagree, Carlin, you think people in this market are going to start hating on him?
Some will.
I don't.
It's so hard to think. We pointed this out before because the idea of him going somewhere else to finally get that elusive title is a great story and understandable. If the current team he's on wasn't a playoff contender, which we all think they are, at least a playoff contender, he's not leaving like a team that's definitely going to be, 3-14 next year.
Well, it's also
so if you're going to chase a title, stay here and chase a title because you could be the missing piece, Larry.
I think that's a very meaty point that Jarrett just made. Because in today's NFL, maybe the worst bet to win a Super Bowl is going to the team that just won it.
Right.
There hasn't been a repeat champion since 2004.
Right. Right. But it's the Tom Brady factor. And that, once again, the optics of Tom Brady going 1-for-1 outside of Bill Belichick, it's only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger in terms of legend.
Here's what will happen. If Larry Fitzgerald does indeed go to Tampa Bay for the 1 year, the group of people locally that will feel hate, they'll feel it more towards Tom Brady. That cleft chin jerk stole our Fitz.
Yeah, that's right. It'll be kind of like that.
That second place runner-up for the Sloan Conference Award stole.
Yeah, stole our guy. Yeah, because if this was really mere retirement, I don't know why the wait is TikTok, why it just keeps going.
Well, you brought up Wolf's point that he made. Couldn't it be, is there validity to it? They're waiting for enough money to free up. But if Larry Fitzgerald's knocking on the door and you're Tampa Bay and you're interested, aren't you going down that road to free up the money to make that happen?
Yeah, so right.
That's... According to overthecap.com, they have $1.944 million in cap space, which is third to least in the NFL
right
now.
Yeah, right. And maybe he has to wait till the Cardinals are done spending their money. Maybe he has to kind of wait that out as well. Because if you were going to engineer the optics of this decision, there's a lot of stuff that I'm sure Fitz is considering if this indeed is his mindset.
Mm-hmm.
How's it going to hit? When do I announce it? How do I manage it afterwards? And all of that. But if he were to do it now, when the Cardinals still have a big chunk of money, that might look a little bit weird. But if the Cardinals make all their moves and then Larry suddenly has an epiphany that he still wants to play, and the Cardinals now really have a stocked roster and no place for him, now maybe it's easier to take that leap. I just think that there's probably two things here. It's what figuring out what I really want to do and how to execute it. I get the idea that Fitz probably has figured out what he wants to do. I think it's a matter of how do I execute it.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Let's see.
Fitz Watch continues here on April 12th. Coming up next, there may have been a play in Major League Baseball last night that breaks the back when it comes to instant replay because the reaction was fierce and it was correct. We'll get into it next. Bickley Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Murata.
Bickley and Murata. One ball, two strikes. The pitch swung on and popped in the air left side near the line. Challenge. Ozuna getting under it. He's going to make the catch. Bohm tagging. He's coming home. Here's the throw, and he is safe. Safe, they say, at home plate. Bohm somehow got his foot in under the tag of Darnold.
Oh, my. Look at a sneaky slider guy.
And if this stands, the Phillies have the lead by an eyelash. 7-6 here in the top of the ninth inning.
That was the WIP Philadelphia call of that play. Sneaky slide guy. He was so sneaky, Alec Bohm, that he didn't even touch home plate. It was called safe play at the plate by Lance Barrett. They went to a long delay for video challenge, and the call stood. And there was not one on a nationally televised broadcast by ESPN with all the camera angles at their disposal, Bic. There was not one camera angle that showed Bohm ever made contact with the plate, yet he was called safe. And it turned out to be the winning run in a 7-6 game for the Phillies.
Yeah.
And the Braves were irate, and they have every reason to be irate. That's the very play that replay was invented for. And using the technology at their disposal, they still missed the call. I don't have any problem with Lance Barrett calling Bohm safe in real time.
But you should be able to get the call right upon replay. I don't understand how they deemed that inconclusive to overturn. When I watched, I'm like, I have not seen a replay where he touches home plate.
No.
Or appears to touch home plate. Yeah, so that to me got me thinking that I'm getting a little uneasy with instant replay, and I'm not saying abolish it, but there's a question to be asked here. And it's about the time involved to watch a sporting event. And all these sports are getting bogged down in this process. I see it in NBA games when they come to the table and look and look and look. And I've seen it in football games, and you saw it in baseball last night. And it's really maddening. And it makes people wonder, would it be better in non-playoff situations in the regular season to accept human error to get back our 5 minutes at the end of a game so you don't have that big pocket of nothingness waiting for the call to be adjudicated? If these sports leagues, I honestly don't understand how they have not developed a process to expedite this. This is 2021. You mean to tell me you can't have a dedicated replay monitor giving you a decision within 15 seconds? 20 seconds. There's no reason for these things to go as long as they do. And I'm wondering about the viability of this. Some of these NBA games, the final 5 minutes of NBA games now are starting to, in some cases, drag on in eternity. From late game timeouts to free throws to replays, it's not good. And I don't know where the balance is.
Look, I've long given up on NBA games being, in my opinion, officiated well. But, you know, walking away from games now, after they're all said and done, I consider it to be a good game when there's no coaches challenge and there's no video reviews.
That's a good way to put it.
And those are few and far between. But last night, I mean, again, but using the language of the rule and the way that you asked the question, is it better just to accept human error? When they were tinkering with the idea of instant replay with all these sports, I would have said no. If you've got rules in place and technology in place to make sure the call is correct, then do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's happening less frequently now. So what are we doing?
Yeah.
The human error will at least even out, you would think,
right,
to some degree.
And think about how many big calls have been made that things can't be reviewable. What's the point of instant replay if things can't be reviewable?
That just falls under the heading of rules to have rules, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Now, we understand that, and I understand how devastating this can be. The Buffalo Bills, did they win that game or did they lose that game? No, they won that game against the Colts on a really bad call, right? And the NFL has come out and said, yeah, we got that wrong. Great.
Well, I mean, how many in the football playoffs? The Rams-Saints game.
Yeah.
Which determined a Super Bowl participant.
Yeah, that's true. That's exactly right. And so if you have instant replay and it's adding all this burden, this downtime burden, keep in mind now, this is really something that all sports leagues have to focus on. Pace of play, even the NFL, even the NBA. The NFL at least gives you the illusion of things going on, people running around, getting in motion. It's not just static. But this is, when you halt a game and stop it and you're in a review process for longer than 60 seconds, you're doing it wrong. I'm sorry, you're doing it wrong.
Well,
and, and like you pointed out, that doesn't even guarantee that they're getting the call right.
60 seconds, I mean, they're never even on the headset back to the video center within 60 seconds.
And that's what's got to stop. There has to be something bam, bam, quick, and just live with it and make it, do it with conviction. Don't belabor over it. Make a decision.
Here's an interesting point from the NBA, though. During the course of the action, every play is under review. A lot of people don't realize that. So if Devin Booker shoots a three-pointer, it's called a three-pointer on the floor, the 3 points go on the board. They continue to play. The video review is happening in Secaucus, New Jersey, and they'll say, no, Booker's foot was on the line. Mm-hmm. Next break of action, you got to change the call and take a point off the board. Why can't more video review work that way? The eye in the sky knows all, in all instances.
Mm-hmm.
Hey,
yeah.
There's a controversy here. I guess that could get bogged down with unlimited review. I do like the fact that NBA teams are only armed with one review. And I still think teams are finding their way on how to use those. A lot of teams use them early in the first half, which in a game with that many possessions, yeah. I'm not sure why that's the reason.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the answer is. All I know is that I'm not even an Atlanta Braves fan, and I'm frustrated. And Drew Smyly, their starting pitcher, called it embarrassing. He said, we have five different angles on a nationally televised game, and it's clear that his foot didn't touch the plate, that it was on the chalk. For MLB not to overturn that, it's embarrassing. Why even have replay if you won't overturn that? Other players from around sports were watching and tweeted. Justin Turner from the Dodgers, absolutely brutal. Saw two angles that were clear. He never touched the plate, and we get a call. Stands. I'm with everyone else. What's the point of replay? Mike Trout, so sad. He tweeted. They got a game stolen from them.
Yeah.
Now maybe it turns out to have the same result, but at least it would have been fairly earned by the Phillies at that point.
Yeah. It's staggering to me that they've got this great technology now that should be an incredible benefit to professional sports, and they can't harness it properly.
No.
There's got to be a better way to engineer this whole thing.
I'm leaning towards going back to the old days.
By the way, I you don't know this because you are working the games, but when they do reviews at the scorer's table and the ref takes off his headphones and he's talking to you to tell you what the ruling is, the camera, it's really weird because it's like, the ref's big face, like Jarrett's big face, just staring down into a camera at you like, oh, I don't like that.
They instituted that last year when the bubble started.
Yeah.
I actually like that.
I don't.
No?
No, not one
You don't
bit.
Like to get the direct explanation on the broadcast?
Weird. It's a weird look because the camera, it's just low and the ref is like just swooping down. I don't know. I don't know.
One day when I'm feeling a little bit goofy, I'll just when that's happening, I'll just poke my head into that camera angle.
Yeah,
just kind of rub my nose.
Yeah, you know he would do that. In fact, he wouldn't have to do that. His hair would already be in the shot.
The Bickley Blast is up next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.